Hi everyone, thank you for joining us for today's webinar on creating an integrated international public affairs campaign. My name is Dasha Ventacheva and I'm the senior associate here at the council. And I'm looking forward to today's discussion. This is one of my favorite topics since we get to hear about other companies' campaigns and how they implement them. So today we have Mark Smith from the Clorox company joining us, and he'll be talking about strategy, tactics for maximum impact, and how to improve campaigns in the future by sharing two case studies with us. As always, we'll have plenty of time towards the end of the webinar to answer your questions, so please feel free to hold them until the end, or if it's something that requires clarification, you can ask during Mark's presentation. So to tell you a little bit more about our presenter, Mark Smith is the Director for International Government Affairs with the Clorox Company. He leads the company's government affairs strategies in over 110 markets outside of the U.S. where Clorox does business. Prior to joining Clorox, he was the president and founder of Clarin Power, a waste-to-energy developer focused on maximizing the electrical energy output of sugar mills in Brazil. And before starting that entrepreneurial venture, he was with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce for 11 years, working as the Managing Director for Western Hemisphere Affairs. And while he was there, he was also the Executive Vice President of the Brazil-U.S. Business Council. So Mark joins us with a great amount of knowledge today, and we're looking forward to hearing his insights, after which I will do a short wrap-up of best practices when planning a international public affairs campaign. So with that, I will go ahead and let Mark take over. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. Hi, everybody who's joining online. This is my first webinar, so you'll have to bear with me. So the topic today was an integrated government affairs strategy, and I took that to be sort of, you know, how you would bring in a number of different elements of the companies, so whether it's regulatory, legal, marketing, et cetera, sort of an integrated team to take on a public affairs or an issue that had a public affairs element. So I wanted to start by taking you through our agenda for today. It's I thought I would provide you with a couple of cases of things that we've worked on in the past, just to give you a little bit of an example. I hope that you'll feel free to take to virtually raise your hand and interrupt me if you'd like while we're doing the presentation. I think that's probably a more effective way to have as much of a dialogue as we possibly can in this virtual setting. So we're going to start with, I'll just give you a little bit of an overview on Clorox so you get a sense for our company, what we're up to. No, we're not owned by P&G. Then I'll take you through a case of our response to the Zika crisis recently and some of the past work that we've done on other mosquito-related illnesses. Our Chile hazardous materials regulation that was quite challenging for us as a company and sort of how we navigated that, and then maybe just some takeaways to give you some overall thoughts about, you know, how you might approach these various issues. So, I think we're all sort of, you know, learning, so I appreciate your thoughts and contributions as we go through this. So a little bit about Clorox. The way I like to look at it is Clorox is a consumer products company that likes to be the big fish in a medium-sized pond. So we're, you know, number one or number two in all of these various segments. Our international profile is a little bit different than, you know, where we are domestically. We don't sell all of these brands. Our international sales are much more limited in terms of the overall brands, mostly sort of cleaning, Burt's Bees, and, you know, depending on where we are, the sophistication of the market, you know, we'll have, you know, Fresh Step or glad or, you know, et cetera. So why don't I go to the next. So company, you know, relatively sort of a big, small company, you know, $6 billion in sales. We're, you know, Fortune 500 company, but compared to, you know, a GE or something like that, much smaller, 8,000 employees. You know, we've got operation in, you know, more than 25 different countries or territories. And as Dasha mentioned, over 100 markets worldwide. So just sort of the breakout, cleaning, household, and then CR International is relatively small, but a much faster growing element of our overall sales and profits than the rest of the company. So I'm very proud to work at Clorox. We take a very serious tack on diversity, the sort of, you know, quality of life issues, environmental issues. They're all the corporate stewardship type beliefs that you have, and so I think we're doing a good job. Obviously, we can do more, but it's a company that I really am proud to go to work for every day in terms of the way that we interact with the communities around us and take our stewardship of the environment, et cetera, very, very seriously. So why don't I go into the Zika case? So you may or may not know, but bleach is one of the cheapest and most effective ways to disinfect both disinfect water for drinking, and also is quite effective in terms of vector control for mosquitoes. So if you put bleach in water, standing water around your home, et cetera, it will eliminate the bacteria that the early stage of the mosquito larvae depend on for their sustenance. And as a result, we've worked with health ministries, you know, all over the world, particularly in Latin America, to respond to a number of health-related crises around mosquito as a vector. So whether it's dengue or chikungunya or recently Zika, you know, we've been very, very active. And so I'll take you through this picture down the bottom shows us working together with the health minister in the Dominican Republic, where we did a very a really exciting partnership with them to educate and donate sachets of bleach to do vector control around people's houses in the Dominican Republic. So as you know, Zika was quite a big issue. There was a huge flare-up in Brazil, which then spread to neighboring countries you know, set foot here, particularly in South Florida in the United States. So, you know, based on the work that we had done on other mosquito-related illnesses, you know, it was a natural for us to think about, you know, how we would get involved. And so, so we put together a cross-functional team that included both the kind of business side, our R&D side, our regulatory side, ourselves in government affairs, and obviously our legal team. So our overall goal in all of this was to ensure that we were positioned, you know, as a key partner of the government and the countries. We focused on countries where there was a real flare-up and, you know, where we had, you know, a significant size business and market share. So we don't really have much of a business in Brazil, but we did focus on Argentina, on Colombia, on the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, et cetera. So the idea, you know, one of the things that Clorox is sort of known for is being quite conservative. And so, you know, our goal was to make conservative claims that, you know, were backed by strong science, not to get too ahead of our skis, not to try to chase some of our domestic competitors in some of these markets that were being, you know, more aggressive, and kind of, you know, play the long game. And so the idea was to combine our usual sort of bleach donations through various NGOs, and building on our history of partnering with governments on education and outreach, to really explain to consumers how to protect their family and how using bleach could be part of the vector control around their homes. Obviously not a silver bullet, but a effective tool in the toolbox. So our role as government affairs was focused on, you know, the outreach to the ministers in health and the key markets that we've identified, and really kind of opening the door, building a relationship, and kind of bringing in our technical experts to liaise with the government experts to share the science that we had behind our claim, provide information on the donations that we're making through the various charitable organizations. We're very careful not to do any, you know, donations directly to the government, only in very severe cases, and we have all sorts of protocols that we have to go through to do that. And also discuss how we might partner on the sort of outreach side. So on the various meetings, it would be, you know, myself, our country GM, and the head of our regulatory for international. One of the reasons that that we went about this is because, quite frankly, you know, we had had some experiences where we hadn't done this kind of outreach, and governments reacted pretty poorly to, you know, that to claims that we were making, you know, based on very sound science, but they sometimes our relationship went crosswise when they thought that we were being too aggressive and trying to, you know, exploit the market. So, for example, there was an issue in Korea that we had to deal with in terms of MERS, where we hadn't done this kind of outreach and consultation with the government, and we got crosswise. So one of the objectives in all of this was to ensure that, you know, with the governments, we were seen as a part of the team, and that we had gone in from a very sort of well-reasoned and conservative manner, ensuring that we weren't viewed as trying to exploit the crisis and more as a part of the team. So the approach was very, very well received. And we chose to actually be quite conservative in the claims that we made. So we focused on the bleach's effectiveness in killing the bacteria that the larvae, the early stage larvae, feed on, versus studies that have been done by the CDC's lab in Puerto Rico that has shown that, you know, bleach would kill the early stage larvae as well as the egg. So those are claims that, you know, we may be making later on as there's more research, but we just decided to go with the lowest denominator that had the most scientific backing for our overall strategy. In terms of the collaboration that came out of the outreach and these discussions, it was, you know, really phenomenal. In Ecuador, for example, the government lab was interested in working with us to develop the protocols to test bleach against eggs, which would really be a first. you know, all of the fogging that you see for against mosquitoes does nothing to the egg. So finding something that you could actually kill the egg, which can lie dormant for many months, you know, will be a huge advance and allow us to play in a number of new ways. In Colombia, they expressed interest in working with us in a pilot in a city outside of Bogota to take a look at how a government or a health agency could work with the community to install not only you know, not only messaging but also effective sort of program at a community level to try to do vector control. That was obviously very exciting. And then in the Dominican Republic, we were invited to partner with the government on journeys, which are a quarterly sort of health education that they do in the primary schools, you know, reaching millions of Dominicans, which was also very exciting for us in terms of, you know, the education side. So, the bottom line, I think, you know, employing this integrated government affairs approach where, you know, we kind of served to open the doors and then brought in our technical team. We're very integrated in terms of the claims that we were making, the marketing that we were doing, and we're careful to give the government a heads up on the claims that we were making, provide them with the evidence in terms of the research, not necessarily asking for their approval, but really just sort of going through all of the backing that we had for the claims and also being quite conservative in terms of how we were addressing it. I think it positioned us quite well to respond to future outbreaks. Let's see sort of, you know, what happens with this coming mosquito season. So let me go on to the next example or case. This was a sort of a different scenario where the UN has a body that develops model, quote-unquote, regulations for various subjects. In this case, there's something called the UN Orange Book, which is model regulations for hazardous goods. And unfortunately for us, their latest version of the Orange Book had included a bleach basically as a hazardous good, even though it's corrosive but not hazardous. And so we have been dealing with this issue in a number of different countries, including the U.S., where we had to get specific exemptions from this this hazardous goods regulation. So despite all of the efforts of our local GM and our regulatory team, you know, providing input at each stage of the regulatory process, the regulation was adopted and had you know, major implications for our formulation. In fact, fortunately for us, we were in the process of developing a change in our formula, but for all of our competitors, obviously, it was a critical issue. Our transportation, warehousing, and then, you know, storage at retail, because there's a limit on how many, quote-unquote, hazardous materials you can have in one space, et cetera. The transportation is much more expensive. It was just a real nightmare. So so we had failed, unfortunately, on the regulatory sort of input process. And as unfortunately, I'm sure most of you government professional affairs professionals are aware, you just kind of brought in like when everybody's hair is on fire to try to solve this issue. So So we pulled together a cross-functional team, you know, our GM, myself, our legal department, our regulatory folks, and our product supply team, which is responsible for all the logistics and manufacturing. We decided to take a attack outside of the kind of regulatory sphere and develop a kind of both a crisis emergency response argument and economic impact argument, and work through the Ministry of Economy to try to reopen the issue. So we were members of the AmCham in Chile, who had developed a regular dialogue with the Undersecretary of the Economy on a number of issues and had a great relationship with her. So we decided to use that that channel. And rather than trying to work at just, you know, as ourselves, Clorox, we decided to, in the absence of a formal industry group, basically create our own. So we used an outside counsel. Our legal team sort of oversaw that and with, you know, my advice, et cetera. And we developed, we brought together all of the largest domestic bleach manufacturers and put together a joint proposal with the exemption of, and we created a new category that we deemed domestic bleach, so basically 3.5% concentration and under it and you know, went to work. So, you know, fortunately, we were able to convince the Secretary of Economy, you know, using a combination of all of those arguments, you know, the technical backing that we had developed through our R&D, all the testing that we had done. And at the end of the day, despite the reticence of the regulatory side to do it, when we were communicating with them directly, we were able to secure the exemption, create this new category, and allow us to keep selling our current formulation. Obviously, you know, eliminating all of the logistical and warehousing, retail, et cetera, headaches, and all the related costs. So, you know, we may be facing this issue in other jurisdictions, unfortunately. You know, I'm seeing it crop up in Argentina and other places. So, you know, now we have a nice kind of roadmap. Obviously, every country is different, but into how we can approach and win on this kind of issue. So those are all just a couple of examples where we've used an integrated team approaching a pretty, you know, difficult thorny issue and developed a successful approach to, you know, move our various priorities forward. I hope those are useful examples for all of you participating. Kind of takeaways, you know, I think particularly when you're dealing with you know, these various health crises, these outbreaks, you know, whether it's H1N1 or Zika, et cetera, you know, being proactive and bringing together an integrated team that goes all the way from government affairs to R&D to take on the problem, you know, really helps you ensure that you have a strategy that's aligned and you have all of the necessary support. Obviously, I'm a big believer in getting the government affairs team involved in the strategy early because, you know, I really – you know, it's okay, but I oftentimes, you know, unfortunately, I'm sure you all have the same experience. You know, you're called in too late, and you know the die is three quarters cast, and you know you're trying to dig yourself out of this deep hole. Whereas, you know, if you'd been involved in the beginning, you could have avoided a lot of these various issues. You know, leveraging the relationships that you build either through, you know, directly with the government or through the industry associations to, you know, open the door for our, you know, technical experts to liaise with their government counterparts to ensure that that folks are comfortable at a technical level with the argument, you know, that you're making. And, you know, I think particularly this kind of proactive approach before you really hit the marketing to go out and explain the research behind the claims and position yourself, you know, as a partner, you know, helps mitigate risk and for us, you know, created a lot of opportunities that might not have been, you know, obvious in the beginning. So with that, I'll stop and be happy to answer any questions. I think I got one from Thomas here.
Mark, thanks so much for sharing your case studies with us. Yes, we do have a question from one of our participants. So you mentioned that a key point for engagement with the international community is making sure that you're seen as a team player rather than focusing on your organization's self-interest, which, you know, most likely is generating revenue. Right. Can you elaborate on how to avoid this major faux pas?
Well, I think the case of the two contrasting examples. So for MERS in Korea, you know, I wasn't involved at all. I just heard about this when it was too late. And basically, we had gone out and with claims that, you know, bleach would kill MERS, and the government, which was completely technically sound without consulting the government. And, you know, the government called us up and said, hey, you can't make those claims. Asked us to retract it publicly, which was crazy because they were technically based and it was a lot of research. But it was a great example of, you know, doing a little bit of outreach in the beginning could save you a lot of issues in the end. So that, you know, versus the way that we went at Zika. Hope that helps.
Thanks, Mark. I think that before, I had a question about your Chile case study. So it sounds like you, you know, you were successful in saving the company quite a bit of money in terms of having to avoid extra costs. How did you then showcase kind of the value of this campaign that you worked on and just how much money was saved?
you know, there are, I think in any government affairs type situation, sometimes there's issues that lend themselves to an easy sort of dollar figure. You know, in this one, you could say, you know, the higher, you know, hazardous goods transportation rates, the additional warehousing that you would do when you have to limit the amount of product you can keep at the store level. You know, all of those things are you know, quantifiable, right, in terms of dollar figure. So that's a kind of easy one. The reformulation, obviously there's quite a direct cost there. That was also, you know, relatively easy to quantify. So fortunately in this case there were, you know, relatively big numbers that we could just say, hey, you know, we saved X on this and X on this and X on this because, you know, they had already basically figured out what it would cost us. And then obviously there was the intangible of, you know, having this kind of strict controls, you know, hanging over all of our product for the, you know, foreseeable future. So, you know, it's hard to assign a value to that. So, you know, generally we try to, there's sort of tangible direct costs, and then there's sometimes they're larger intangible. But that's kind of the way that we went about communicating the impact for the company. You know, fortunately, this wasn't a situation where, you know, we had to do much selling, because the prospect of having to take our product off the shelf and reformulate was sharpened the mind of on the business side. So we had a lot of support.
Thank you, Mark. Before we move on to more questions, I thought that it might be a good idea to go through kind of the key steps to creating a successful integrated public affairs campaign. And I think the three stages that we really want to cover are, of course, planning, execution, and the follow-up to the campaign. So for the planning stages, I here up on the slide, you can see some questions. You know, for each company, the process is going to be different. So I think these are really the key questions that you want to be asking yourself as you formulate a plan. So what is, you know, first of all, you have to be proactive and decide what is your issue. Sometimes, you know, in the case of Clorox and, you know, the regulatory challenge in Chile, the issue is going to come to you. In other cases, you have to be a little more proactive and decide, you know, what is an emerging issue or an opportunity to get involved that really aligns with your company's work, and how is your company uniquely positioned to provide a solution to that issue. From there, you really want to be, by other business units, you really want to be viewed as a solution provider and a key partner in this process. So think about, how does the issue align with your company's external objectives? And you should, you know, that should already be a part of your strategic plan for the year, so it's fairly easy to, you know, identify how it is that you're going to position this campaign. Is it going to enhance your company's reputation? Is the point to enhance, you know, your respect from society and stakeholders? Is the point to shape the innovation environment related to the issue, to shape the action environment? If there's, you know, regulatory or legislative action that's being taken at that level? Or is it just to create stronger engagement opportunities with partners on a global scale? So depending on what the goal of the campaign is, you can start thinking about ways for the issue to get traction. You know, are there upcoming major events that you can participate in to spread your message? Are there speaking opportunities for executives within your company? So, for example, a few years ago, we had somebody from Pfizer present on this program, and he talked about how they did an anti-doping campaign that they timed with the 2010 and the 2012 Olympic Games. Obviously, the Olympics are huge. You have your audience. So this was a good way for them to, you know, be viewed as a thought leader in that area and to talk about issues that matter to them, while also the opportunity pretty much presented itself, given the, you know, when you're talking about the Olympics and sports, anti-doping is an issue that comes up pretty much automatically. So once you have your issue and you know the cause that you're going to be focusing on, you really need to build a support system. So first of all, how are you going to sell this concept internally? You'll need engagement not only from the top, engagement and approval, not only from the top, but also from all of the various teams that might be involved throughout the process. And as Mark mentioned in his two case studies, that can be anything from legal, sales, marketing, research and development, government affairs, general managers at the country level. For example, for research and development, you want to make sure that there's alignment with the company's commitment to the industry. With legal, you want to ask if there are questions of liability, confidentiality, IP protection. And with business development, you also want to see if this is somewhat of a revenue opportunity. And as this was, we'll get back to this later, but as this was brought up kind of earlier in the webinar, you don't want it to be a sales pitch and you want to seem authentic, but at the same time, the point of most campaigns is to generate revenue and to create a favorable attitude towards your brand when people are thinking of purchasing your product. So those are your internal stakeholders. And then for your external stakeholders and partnerships, you want to pick a third-party group that will provide credibility to your campaign. So there's a variety of groups that you can work with, and these will be used for gathering intelligence and building awareness for your campaigns. So you can start with trade associations, the press, social media, regulators, other companies working within the industry, and form third-party partnerships that way. And once you have those parties, be sure that you kind of identify the strengths that each of them will bring to the campaign and leverage them. And, you know, you really want to make sure that the people that you're partnering with are also a trusted authority on the issue who can help you gain support, and they will serve as your third-party validator. So it doesn't look like, you know, you just picked a cause and, of course, you're supporting it because it somehow brings attention to your company. You also want to find somebody who doesn't seem like they have as much of a stake in the game, or at least in your business, which will make the partnership seem much more authentic as the campaign progresses. Communicating basically goes hand-in-hand with building support, and at this stage of the process, we're talking about communicating at an internal level. So once you have your key partners and you know who you should be working with and you get the necessary support from them, you want to make sure that they're really involved throughout the whole process so that they're aware of the steps that are being taken, what the campaign is going to look like, and exactly what their role is going to be. And this will just ensure alignment in the messaging, in the actions, and the implementation, and help your campaign be as seamless as possible. And then another important stage of the planning process is evaluating the campaign before it actually begins. So you want to look at your budget, you want to look at your resource capacity, and of course that's going to be different for every company. So basically you want to think about how workable is the campaign that I'm planning. So once you look at your resources, you also then want to think about what is the value added for the company and what is that value in both the short and the long term, because they will be different. You know, in the short term, it might just bring attention to the issue. In the long term, it might be saving you money, or it might be boosting your reputation in the years to come, especially if you continue to make this an issue that the company continues to work on. And then another part of the evaluation process is making sure that you've really thought about everybody that needs to be involved and just making sure that you didn't forget anybody that could have been a key part of the process. So the planning process, I think, is probably a point that you want to spend the most time on, because then it'll really ensure that your campaign is successful once it actually takes place. So as you're executing, three points are: know your audience, time the campaign accordingly, and be authentic. So of course, in terms of your audience, you want to think about who are you trying to reach and what are the best ways to do it. So is it, you know, what are the communication channels that you're going to use? Is it social media? Is it global media? Is it direct advocacy? And if it is, you know, depending on what the method is, depending on who your stakeholders are, the method is going to be different. So if you're trying to reach a really wide audience, you're probably better off using social media or advertising campaigns or global media. If it's legislators, direct advocacy is always the most efficient way to contact them. And then in terms of timing, you also want to think about where your audience's attention is when you are planning to execute the campaign. So, for example, some companies have planned campaigns to be launched during the holidays. There's a little less attention given to the news cycle. There's kind of a broader bandwidth for the types of issues that you can talk about. However, if you're targeting legislators, this is probably not the best time to do this. So, again, you want to think about who your audience is, and that'll determine the timing. And then it'll also, you know, think about the time of year, the time of day, depending on the tactics that you're using. And then once you answer those questions, you can think about which media outlets will be the most effective, depending on the timing of the campaign. And once again, you know, where is your audience located, where in the news cycle are we, and where the audience's attention is at that time. And this was already brought up earlier in our discussion, but it's really important to seem authentic when you take on these issues. You don't want it to be a sales pitch. You don't want to make it seem like you're pushing your product and you're just pushing sales. In the Zika case that Mark talked about, obviously the company was helping to solve a public health crisis. So certainly they were using their product and saying that our product is the best for solving this issue. But however, the crisis was on such a large scale that, you know, this was a good example of kind of combining altruism and the business case. So, you know, it's certainly there's not a clear-cut answer for achieving this, but, you know, you want to look like you're achieving greater objectives instead of just making money for your company. And then in terms of being authentic, you know, once again, we can get back to the third-party validator, make sure that their message is aligned with yours and it doesn't look like, you know, you kind of pulled them out of left field and this is not somebody that was connected to the issue previously. So they should have experience advocating for the issue and talking about it, and they should really also sound like an expert, much like yourself. And then for the follow-up process, you want to make sure that even after the campaign is done, you don't lose momentum. And Mark touched on this when he talked about the fact that your work on whatever the issue is can pretty much be a case study for future campaigns. So as Mark mentioned, you know, in the Chile example, they might also be facing the same issue in Argentina and in other markets. Because they've already done this, they pretty much have a template for how to approach this type of problem. And not only do they have experience in doing this, they also know where they can improve in the future. So the hope is that once you implement a campaign on one issue, when you're presented with this issue again, you can only do it better a second time because you already know where your strengths and weaknesses were throughout the process. And then once the campaign is done, you can also think about future opportunities for continued promotion for the message. Are you going to be publishing reports or finding speaking opportunities for your senior executives to continue bringing attention to the issue? Are there additional social media campaigns that you can run to kind of keep the conversation going with your stakeholders? You can try blog posts or CEO endorsement, and, of course, continued colleague engagement as well. And then once the campaign begins, and throughout the process, and especially in follow-up, you want to make sure that you're measuring your work and showing what you did and what was successful and how it is that you're providing value to the company. And again, depending on the campaign and the type of work that you're doing, the metrics will be different for each one, whether or not they're qualitative or quantitative. So it can be anything from performance on a digital platform and kind of the, you know, the engagement metrics that you can find there, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or even LinkedIn. It could be event attendance if this is geared towards an in-person audience, response rates or issue awareness levels if it's geared towards legislators and the more the regulatory environment, or it could be the dollar amount saved for the company, such as in the case in Chile that Mark talked about, which obviously saved the company a lot of dollar value, as he mentioned. And then another important part for keeping your campaign going is to continue engaging the colleagues that worked on it. This is, you know, usually these campaigns are a company-wide effort, so it's important to make everybody feel like they had a part in it, and this will only make your work easier in the future. So you want to keep all interested parties informed of any relevant developments that take place afterwards. You could also create a follow-up strategy, whether that's an internal survey to talk about, you know, what everybody thought of the campaign process and whether or not they have feedback, how to improve it in the future. And this is also a good way to get new ideas for issues that you'll be working on that may not necessarily even relate to the one that you just did a campaign on. And then in order to do that, you can also talk about the campaign internally. You can use it as a case study moving forward. You can mention it in newsletters. You can mention it on social media channels. And basically any way that you can kind of promote continuous issue monitoring and reporting to everybody who was involved, this will only foster a more kind of community environment internally and make sure that these people who are willing to help you throughout the process are there next time you need them again. And then in terms of external engagement, you also want to think about what future engagement will look like on the issue in the future. So are there coalitions that you can form with other companies that are facing similar challenges or that can be advocates on the same issue with you? Are there country offices for your company that you didn't engage this time around that could be potential partners? Are there media outlets or other associations or NGOs that work on the issue that could also be a support system in the future? So these are all questions to think about, and these are generally the best practices that here at the Council we've talked about with our members and discussed in campaigns that have been that we've seen as being very successful. You know, there has to be a very clear planning process. There has to be a thought-out execution process, and, of course, you want to follow up and not lose momentum, especially in creating future campaigns. So I hope that this will be helpful for you. We will be distributing at least my portion of the slides, and then if Mark is fine with us sharing his portion, we'll also send those out. So I think that at this point we can move on to the question and answer session. If anybody has clarification questions they want to ask to Mark or any general questions, please post them in the chat box that's located in the lower left-hand corner of your screen. And I think I'll go ahead and start with the first one for you, Mark. What would you say was the biggest public affairs challenge of working on these campaigns?
Well, obviously, the two campaigns were quite different. I think the challenge on the Zika side was to ensure that we were able to execute our strategy in a way that we could coordinate and partner with the government as appropriate. But the last thing that we wanted to do was get crosswise and have issues that would cause problems for our brand moving forward. So really it was about kind of brand protection, positioning ourselves as a partner and ensuring that we were kind of seen as having our shoulder to the wheel together, rather than profiteering. So it's a delicate kind of balance, and I think it requires a patient and a conservative approach. You know, and the other side, it was, this was something that was, entrenched, I would say, sort of three deep, right? You have the UN model regulation, you have the Chilean law, and then you have a Chilean regulation. So the ability to dig ourselves out of that situation, was very, very complex. It required a lot of effort. And I would say looking at it, initially it was a pretty low percentage possibility. So trying to keep expectations reasonable, while you're trying to be optimistic, and find a way. I think that was a challenge on that second example.
Thanks, Mark. When you talked about the Zika case, You talked about then forming partnerships with other governments like Ecuador and the Dominican Republic. How do you decide who you will partner with or not? And especially, you know, depending on who the stakeholder is, like whether it's a government or another organization, how do you make that decision? And in which cases do you say no?
Well, I mean, the first thing, obviously, you know, is that, you know, it has to pass the smell test, right? So the partnerships need to be above board. They need to be transparent, and they need to be ethical, right? So, you know, at any step of the process, when things start to go crosswise and not hit all of those bars, then you disengage immediately, right? Because the reputation of the company is critical, and that's something that you know once you lose, it's very difficult to rebuild. So being on the side of angels and making sure that that everything is above board, that there's appropriate sort of arm's length distance, and in the case where you are actually partnering with the government on something that it's very above board and transparent, so I would say that those are the key kind of guardrails in terms of looking at how you quote unquote partner. Same thing with any sort of association or third party.
Thanks, Mark. And that makes sense, considering that you really have the company's reputation to think about as you move forward with any campaign. Could you also maybe talk a little bit more about resource allocation throughout the planning process? You know, Clorox is a big company. However, I don't think I can think of, I can think of a few companies who don't have financial or resource constraints, but certainly when you have multiple campaigns to implement, this is something that you need to think about.
Yeah. So we are very, 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 very lean. So just to give you a sense, I mean, it's basically myself handling all of our global government relations outside of the United States. So really it's about trying to manage through influence with our local team, trying to get identify local champions that can do the on-the-ground work, before and after. Maybe you'll show up for one meeting or something like that to kind of kick things off, but obviously there's a lot of pre-work and follow-up that needs to be done. And kind of, educating and arming those people to prosecute the campaign. We try to do as much as we possibly can remotely to keep all of the costs down. And, in terms of the in-person thing, it's that one big meeting and that's pretty much it. And then it's the local team. So, that way you can be pretty effective, leverage your limited resources, quite well, and also, be effective. So we're always thinking about how we can work that way.
Thank you, Mark. Can you tell us anything about any campaigns that you're working on currently?
There are a number of different things I'm working on, but probably one of the ones that I'm most excited about is for our GLAD brand in Canada on, waste management issues. So we're working on building support for composting, organic composting, and also trying to maintain and grow our market share We have a clear blue badge that substitute for the big blue carts that you see for recycled materials. So that's a kind of municipality by municipality fight with all sorts of bodies buried. So it's quite an interesting campaign, and we've got, you know, all the integrated campaign bells and whistles going on that one. And it's quite a complex problem, but you know, it's one that you know, I'm passionate about in terms of, you know, protecting the environment. So it's a great thing to work on. So
thank you. That sounds pretty interesting, Mark. Maybe we'll next year we'll tap you to talk about that case study once the campaign.
Hopefully, we'll have some good. you know, results from our first year of that campaign.
Yeah, I hope so. I wish you luck. So we have just a few more minutes left, and I wanted to ask you what you think the one key piece of advice that our participants should take away from today's session when thinking about planning their own campaigns.
You know, I mean, I think it's I think doing the spade work, you know, in the beginning to get everybody aligned will save you a lot of time and hassle, you know, down the road. So bringing together that cross-functional group and ensuring that you sort of understand where everybody's coming from so that, you know, you don't get crosswise right at a critical point or not have the resources or support or whatever that's necessary. So, you know, I think, you know, just really paying attention to that initial spade work and the strategy process, making sure that you, you know, also sometimes, you know, you need to step back and let someone else take the win and be a facilitator. Sometimes politically that also helps too, so. Maybe there's a couple ideas.
Thank you so much. Mark, I think both of the case studies you brought today are very interesting, especially because they deal with different issues, and one is kind of addressing a public health crisis, and another one is addressing a regulatory issue. So obviously the processes for implementing them were pretty different. So again, thank you so much for your time, and we appreciate you sharing your insights with us. To the participants, we will have a recording of this session, and we'll also be sending out follow-up materials in the next week or so. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me directly. My contact information is up on the slide right now. And if you have questions for Mark, I would be happy to put you in touch with him. So again, thank you so much. We have some international webinars that are coming up in the next month before the end of the year. So I hope that we will connect before the end of 2017. Thanks so much.
Thank you.